episode 127 of
Brutal Battle. Yes, as we promised, it's Mike Johnzak back on the mic.
Hello.
No pun intended with the back on the mic thing, whatever. Haha. I'm already excited because the mystery beers we have sitting in front of us, both dark, very dark.
Yup.
And it's exciting. And Rebecca has already expressed a lot of interest in one of the beers. She was actually, before we started recording, just continually sniffing from one of my beers and going, So, hey, she kind of gave away that she thinks one of them is good, but we'll be the ultimate judges.
Everybody's tastes are different.
Very accurate. But first, we must talk about the hop knowledge. And today we have what is called the Summit Hop. Summit hops are a unique variety with a novel history. Summit was released by the American Hops Dwarf Association in Yakima, Washington, and its story begins with Nugget Hops. It's a little easier to write out the lineage formula versus sentence form, and here it is. So it's basically got a bunch of different derivations of Nugget, Open Pollination, Zeus, some experimental hops that have numbers, and Lexus. I haven't even heard of Lexus hops. So it went through numerous different combinations with other hops and Open Pollination to eventually get to the Summit hop as it is today. So, very interesting. The original Nugget seeds were from a commercial hop field in Hera, Washington. Summit is a semi-dwarf variety in the following years after 2000 brought growing trials to prove Summit's worth in yield, brewing character, and resistance to diseases and fungus. Its alpha acid is 16 to 18%.
That is pretty respectable.
Huge. Yeah. Huge as far as alpha acids go. So that's a lot of bittering right there for that hop. It's often found in IPAs, mainly in the United States, and it's easy to see why. Aside from its bittering qualities of this hop, this variety also has strong aromatic qualities, which are truly citrus, having notes of tangerine, orange, and grapefruit, all sounding very, very good to me. Summit Hops, it's the first dwarf originating from the United States, and is the only low trellis hop in the Yakima Valley. It requires hand picking due to the lack of machinery that takes a lot of work, as the yield is very high. 2,200 to 2,700 pounds per acre.
Wow.
That's a lot. Jesus. It's susceptible to downy mildew, unfortunately, yet tolerant to powdery mildew and verticillium wilt. I don't even know what that one is, but...
Doesn't sound good.
No, actually, it sounds really bad. It's like, I'm sorry, Mike, you have verticillium wilt on your penis.
Oh, no. I need to go to the clinic, get my antibiotics.
Yeah, that is what you would say. So some examples of some beers with the Summit hop. One of them is 50/50 Brewing Company's Rock Slide IPA. And if you know, 50/50 is the one that does the Eclipse Stouts with different barrel aging. And one not far from us in Pennsylvania, Stouts Brewery, Stouts spelled S-T-O-U-D-T, apostrophe
S. Familiar with that.
Yes, they had a Black Eye IPA.
Hmm.
And that one also had Summit hops. So there you have it, the Summit hop. Very interesting, and we're getting closer and closer to the end of the hop knowledge. It'll be sad for some when it's over. Happy for others, I'm sure. So anyway, the topic for today, and I must say, we're still sipping a little bit on that Todd the Axeman from Surly. Outstanding beer.
Delicious.
Yes.
Excellent job, gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
And any ladies working at the brewery.
Yes. Good job being politically correct on that. We should do that. So I wanted to talk to Mike about a few acquisitions. One that's potentially in the works right now, and one that actually happened. That one's in the works too. They're both in the works. Oh no, did it happen?
I heard the Lagunitas Heineken happened.
Okay.
That's what I had heard. Now,
got it.
Please don't quote me on this if I'm wrong, but I had heard that one was done, contract signed.
Okay. So what do you know about it? Because I actually haven't looked much into it, but I know you know some more.
From what I've heard, Heineken has bought out 50% of Lagunitas at a stellar deal for the Lagunitas guys. From what I, once again, heard, Lagunitas was valued at $1 billion. So they sold half the company off to Heineken for $500 million, pretty much just so Heineken can get their beer overseas to international markets.
You know, and I'm wondering, once this happens, once they're in international markets, how much their profits are really going
to
jump.
Well, and what I wonder, too, is if you look at the American palates, the international palates, they're two completely different styles of palates going across the board. So
yeah.
How is Lagunitas going to relate over to in European countries, the Asian markets, where there is good beer scenes, but they're completely almost different to the American beer scenes.
Yeah, and they have a ton of hoppy stuff, so...
Correct. How's that going to translate to the English guys, which tend to lean towards more malts?
Plus, here's the other thing. How much product can they ship overseas at this point?
Well, they got the brewery out in California.
They
now have a brewery
one.
In Chicago.
Right.
So, they're definitely making more beer than they've ever done before.
That's true. I didn't really think about... I'd forgotten about the Chicago brewery. They opened, like, a year ago, maybe?
Right around
Not
there.
Even a year ago, maybe. I don't know. A year or less ago. So, I don't know. Maybe they have the volume to start shipping that, but... Yeah, I wonder what their profits would be like if they started catching on internationally and they have the distribution through Heineken, who distributes to a lot of countries,
almost
I'm sure.
Everywhere, yeah.
They could become a powerhouse.
Uh-huh, like a second Sam Adams almost, really.
And
if
I'm sure,
not overtake Sam Adams if their international really blows up.
Yeah. The interesting thing is this. I think in this sale, there's very little risk for Lagunitas as far as profits.
Correct, yeah.
Because they're going to get...
All the risk is on Heineken, in my opinion.
Yes, exactly. Heineken's actually taking a very big risk.
Mm-hmm.
Paying $500,000...
Half a billion.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Half a billion, that's right. Sorry, I misspoke. Yeah, paying $500 million just trying to bank on the fact that those beers will translate to international palates
And
explode and get a lot of money. Because if they're spending that much money... They would need to really see the profits jump from Lagunitas to get their money back in a timely manner.
Either that or Lagunitas is going to be selling for $30, $40 a six-pack overseas, which good luck trying to sell that one.
Some people might pay it, but most people would not, I'm sure. But you have that, but then from the Lagunitas standpoint, you have very little risk financially because you just got $500 million.
Mm-hmm.
You got that. You're going to get help with distribution internationally, and that's naturally going to increase your profits anyway.
And your popularity.
Internationally, that is. But you might lose some stock socially in the craft beer community. Because a lot of craft beer geeks don't really like the whole selling off to bigger companies, especially if they're considered to be macros. We saw that with AB InBev. Although, I don't know, there are people who have jumped away from those breweries after they sold, but there are also people who are just like, you know what? It's not that bad. Like
no.
Goose Island with AB InBev, they're still pumping out awesome Bourbon County.
Look at Elysian that just sold out
right.
Not too long ago to AB.
Space Dust is still very tasty.
AB, I will not really drink your core Budweiser, Bud Light beers, but I got to say, when you started buying out microbrews and things like that, they were actually smart about it. They buy them out to pretty much get the distribution rights all across the country. And they leave the main core guys at the brewery and whatnot to focus on making that good craft beer they always have. They're just mostly buying them out and buying into them so they can broaden their distribution, broaden their portfolio at what they sell. They realize that craft beer is not going anywhere and it's only going to get more and more popular.
So how are they going to get a part of it? They're certainly not making it with their Beechwood, you know? Which, that is a whole other thing for me that kind of bothers me. Why are they pushing the Beechwood thing so hard when they're actually poking fun at craft beers for using other ingredients other than hops and grain and
like that commercial
corn.
With the peachy pumpkin beer that AB did, yep.
And then you're going to be like, we got Beechwood in it.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's what you're making fun of. It's that kind of stuff anyway, so I don't know. Just kind of weird. That's a side tangent. At any rate, I don't know how this whole Heineken thing's going to go over because Lagunitas, I believe, was very well known for being anti-selling out for quite some time. They were very pissed about the whole AB InBev thing where they went around. And from what I heard, I think AB InBev talked to Lagunitas about selling to them, and they basically gave him a big middle finger and were like, we'll never do that, that's BS. But then they go and sell to Heineken, so that could make some craft beer people mad.
You also have to wonder what AB might have presented them to get into their portfolio to buy them out. I'm sorry. I run an awesome company. I make awesome beer. Somebody drops a half mil in my or half billion in my lap and says, hey, we want half your company so we can distribute it overseas. I'm not saying no. I think you'd be dumb to say no. That sounds like a great retiring plan. Oh, wait, and you still own half a company that's still worth half $1 billion right now.
Yeah. Well, it's like I was saying, financially, it makes a lot of sense for Lagunitas, financially. But I don't know what the backlash is going to be, or if they really care about that, because when you have that kind of money, maybe you don't need to.
When you're making that great of beer,
they
as long as you keep
beer.
Making great beer, people
that's
are going to keep drinking it.
That's true. So we talked a little bit about the whole AB InBev aspect of things too. So I think that's actually going to be a good segue because I want to talk about AB InBev as well. Because it's rumored that they are looking at trying to buy SAB Miller, which is apparently a company that does Pilsner Urquell and Peroni, which obviously they have distribution in the United States. They're not brewed there, but pretty big internationally. So I wanted to read a little bit out of a article that I found, actually on CNN, so it's news.
Seems pretty trustworthy.
Yeah, it's news. So Budweiser maker Anheuser-Busch InBev wants to buy SAB Miller. A merger would create a, quote, super brewery with 9 of the world's top 20 beers by volume and annual sales of $55 billion. That's nice. Shares in both companies shot up. The combined group would be worth about $276 billion.
Wow. That's some walking around change.
Yeah, I guess. SAB Miller, which makes lagers such as Pilsner, Urquell, and Peroni, said it had no details yet of the planned takeover offer. If the deal happens, it will be the biggest merger in brewery history and could rank among the top 10 takeovers of all time, according to Dealogic and EY. AB InBev, the world's biggest brewer by volume, has been interested in making a bid for SAB Miller, the world number two, for quite some time. Sales of Bud and Bud Light have been waning for years, putting AB InBev in a tough spot. The rest of the article is pretty much not that.
Filler.
Yeah, it's pretty much filler after that. So, but that's the main crux of it. So here you have AB InBev, already super, super powerful. And then they're potentially going to soak up the number two beer seller in the world.
See, and this almost sounds more like a pipe dream that they're, it's like, hey, the answer's always no until we ask, so why not we ask? But this one almost sounds like it, I don't think it's going to happen myself.
You don't think so? I feel like it could.
Well, anything could, but on a percentage scale, I'd go probably 70% to a no, 30% to a yes.
Where I'm coming from, I feel like usually with these types of beer acquisitions, the biggest holdout has to do with what the perception amongst the beer drinkers will be. I think in this situation, these Peroni and Pilsner Urquell beers are basically viewed as macros anyway, at least in the United States.
Import macros, yep.
Right. So if that company is going along with that same thinking, I'm sure they'd kind of be like, okay, sure. I mean, you want to give us a ton of money? You want to buy us out?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, let's
get rich.
Yeah, let's get super rich. Let's all of us just get rich. So smoke cigars and drink. No, they wouldn't drink their own beer, I don't think. They drink good beer to celebrate. Or champagne. Who knows? I don't know. But so two acquisitions there about to go down.
Yep. Big one still.
That's... It just makes me wonder how many more I'm going to hear about in the span of 1 year.
Oh, several.
And then when AB InBev bought Goose Island, I kind of thought at that point it was a one-off, that it would be a one-off, because I'm like, I feel like craft breweries are so independent-minded. Most of them are just going to be like, nah, man, not interested at all.
But then that money comes out.
I mean,
money changes
true.
A lot of people's decisions. You know, you might say, hey, I love making my craft beer. I'm never going to sell out. Well, then somebody walks in with a briefcase or a sack full of cash and sets it down in front of you. Yeah, you're going to sell out.
Well, I could also see it in the instance that, you know, someone starts getting older and they've been
looking
like, you know,
the end game.
Right. I've been doing this for how many decades?
Mm-hmm.
I've had a good run at it. It was fun. I kind of would like to retire now. Oh, $500 million, I could get a part of that and be very, very happy to retire. You know, so yeah, money does speak to people, and at some point, they're not even going to be involved all that much anymore. Correct. So they can just be like, let people think what they're going to think. I'm going to take the money and just be happy. So, although you also hear, money does not buy happiness, which I agree with.
But it sure does help.
It can help. It depends on your mindset, but yeah. But anyway, I just thought those were worth mentioning because they're pretty current topics. At least when we're recording this, they're pretty current topics. So, anything else you want to say on that, Mike, or that pretty much covers it?
The one thing I got to say about AB buying out microbrews, they've been doing a good job at when they do. They're not messing with the people making the beer, and they're just focusing on distribution. Keep it that way. I don't mind a big beer company buying into a macro brew, to expand it into other marketplaces. I have a problem when they buy into it and they want to start changing everything to make it cheaper to produce so we can make more profits on the bottom line. Let the good craft brewers do what they do and just help move their product into other states they're not there.
Well, and thus far, I think that's what they've been doing, and that's
correct.
That's a smart way to do it. You would just hope that they're not going to go that other direction and be like, all right, look, let's see how much profit we can
Nobody's
get.
Nobody's going to buy a Budweiser IPA, but if Budweiser were to buy a brewery that had killer IPAs, they're going to keep buying those IPAs as long as they stay the same.
Let's not forget, they already tried it with the American Pale Ale that they made.
Yep.
Which I did try it back then, years ago. No, it was not. But
it's
the
not
brand,
something I'm going to go out and spend my money on.
But it's also the brand scares a lot of people away when it comes to that style. So I guess they, because it's gone now.
Oh, yeah. Long gone.
I'm guessing it didn't work out, even though it tasted pretty good. And they were just like, look, the perception just won't allow it. So, hey, let's start buying some craft breweries to get in on it. So, smart. Smart company. Definitely smart. Whether you love them or hate them.
Yeah.
Whether you love them or hate them. Cool. Well, thanks for engaging in this conversation.
My pleasure.
I'm excited to get to these mystery beers.
So am I. The color, the heads on them.
I think they're both not able to be seen through. I would say the head on A is darker than the head on B. Yeah, and if you hold it up to the light, A is a little bit darker than B, but just looking at them from like a foot away, you can't tell the difference.
They both look like delicious motor oil to me.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, let's start sniffing on B or on A. Why would I jump to B?
Big chocolate nose on A.
So much.
Oh my strong gosh. Maltiness.
Like real dark chocolate. Oh my God. Actually, it kind of smells like a mixture of milk and dark chocolate to me. I get a little bit of a nutty characteristic in the nose as well.
You get a very nutty flavor off of it, too.
There's a little bit of a vanilla-y nose to it. There might be a woody characteristic, too, like it's barrel-aged somehow.
No, I don't think this one's barrel-aged. If it is, it sees a very, very short time.
Well, it might not be a spirit. It could just be like an oak barrel, straight up. But there's a little bit... There's a slight coffee nose on there as well, but it's very, very slight, and it's kind of at the end. But tons and tons and tons and tons of chocolate.
Very good creamy, smooth mouthfeel to it.
Whoa. Okay.
Hits the chocolate and vanilla on the flavor.
Okay. I get tons and tons of chocolate when I sip that. And like I said, it's coming through like it smelled, a mixture of dark and milk chocolate. It's got a kind of lactic, milky type quality.
But yeah, there's still a bitter chocolate there on the back finish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Also, the first thing I noticed when I took a sip, alcohol has got to be high on this sucker. It tastes a little raisiny, that you get that with a lot of high ABV beers.
Okay, because when you first said high alcohol, I'm like, this doesn't really taste like high octane. But then you said that raisiny flavor that does happen with a lot of the malt-forward high octane beers. I'm like, okay. I could see this maybe being a 9-10 percenter.
It's got a bit of a burn.
Honestly, I don't get any burn off of it. I get this nice creamy smoothie milk feel.
I get some burn, especially if I don't keep taking sips and I just sit here. My throat's starting to really warm and get a little of that burn to it. And while I keep taking sips, I'm getting a little bit of a coffee aspect coming through a little bit on the end, just like in the nose. I think it's other than that raisiny aspect and the very present alcohol, I think the nose and the flavor are very similar. They're almost a verbatim what you get. It's pretty good.
That is a solid, tasty beer.
Mm. It's got a little vanilla aspect, too.
Yep.
And I keep going with it. That's good. There's a decent amount going on. It's a heavy beer. It's a sipping beer. It's a hearty beer.
This would be a great beer on like a cold winter's night, sitting around a campfire.
The best. It would be phenomenal for that. It really would. So B, let's jump to that. A little sad to leave A, but...
You can always come back.
Well, I will say in comparison...
I get much more of a coffee aroma off of this one.
Yes, I'd agree with that. B has a lot of coffee to it. I get a little bit of... little black licorice in there. I get a little roasty malt note. I get a little milk. A little milk chocolate on the nose as well.
Especially when you give it a little swish, you can really get the milk.
It smells pretty good. It's, although, in comparison to the nose that was on A, it's significantly less rich.
Much more drier than A on the taste.
Really, is it?
Yeah, it's not as creamy and smooth. You get more of a drier style.
Oh, yeah. There's a smoke to it.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, there's a smoke to that.
Huh.
Mm. And it's actually almost giving me a little bit of that kind of beef jerky soy aspect to it.
That liquid smoke flavor.
Yeah, a little soy sauce note to it. There's a little bit of a chocolatiness to it, a little milk chocolate in there, and there are some coffee notes. There are decent coffee notes.
This one's going to be a hard one to rate here.
Mm.
Those are solid, solid beers.
I'm actually getting a little bit of that black licorice in B as well, the more I keep sipping it. So, oh my gosh. Very different. Similar in some ways, very different in other ways. Mm. Oh my God. Oh my God. B to A. A is so, so thick. That mouthfeel is huge and it's creamy.
Yeah, it just glides right down your palate.
That's really good. I do think like that I might like the ABV to be a little bit lower on that because I think that it might increase the chocolatey notes maybe a little bit more.
Sissy! Sissy!
No, but that's a minor thing. I mean, I'm good with the way this beer is now. I'm just saying if the ABV came down a little bit, it would just make it that much better. But it's still quite good. Mm. Yeah, I just want to keep sipping that sucker. Woo! Mm. I'm still feeling the alcohol. It's still very present there. Very present.
I think I know what my ratings are going to be.
Okay.
And it's going to be a close one, though.
Okay. I got to taste B real quick again.
I'm going 6 on A and 5 on B.
That is a close one.
Yeah, I probably would maybe go 5.25, 5.5 on B if Carlin allowed me to do those half percentages, but I got to do a solid number, so I'm going 6 and 5.
I feel like I might be getting like a slight cinnamony quality on A now as I keep drinking it. I feel like things just keep coming out, and it's nice. Okay, so actually, you know what? I gotta taste B again.
I'm having a hard time.
Mm. Yeah, B's good, but when you stack it up next to A.
That just creamy mouthfeel, the body of it. B is good, but with that dry, not as full bodied as A,
yeah.
I gotta give it to A.
B's still solid, though. Okay, so I think I'm going to go ahead and go with you with a 6 on A. I think a 6 is good for that.
Yep.
It's a quite a good beer. It's not like the most phenomenal beer, but I think a 6 is good for this show.
I'd pay my hard-earned money for that any day of the week.
Oh, I'd buy that again for sure. And this is another perfect time to give people reminders. 6s on the show are very good.
We rate things rough around here.
That's why it's called Brutal Battle. With B, I actually think I'm going to go a 4. I believe that B is 2 notches below A, in my opinion. But that's just...
I can kind of see that one.
It was tough, though.
The flavor profile of B, I love... My one complaint is just the finish and the body of it.
Very dry.
Dried your mouth out. And then the body just wasn't quite as full-bodied as I expect from drinking dark beers.
Meanwhile, A is just very hearty finish to it. It continues to coat your mouth.
It's like dessert in a glass.
It very much so, with the aperitif involved as well. Chocolate and aperitif. Could there be spirit? Could it be barrel-aged with a spirit, A?
I still personally don't think so. I don't get enough woodsy or spirit flavor out of there.
I don't know. But
they might
there's
do
a lot
some,
of alcohol.
Oak spirals or something like that.
There's a lot of an alcohol aspect to it, though. I'm just saying. Anyway, okay. So, overall... I did have a hard time, though. I do think that B, I was between 4 and 5, and it was really hard, but ultimately I went 4. There could be days where I could go a 5.
Yeah.
So it was tough. It was really tough.
It was kind of a warm day. Colder day, you could rate that a little higher.
Yeah, maybe. So A is the winner with an overall of 6, and will be on the website as one of our top beers in the show.
Nice.
Yeah. And B was not too far away from getting up there. But
no, B was a very respectable score for the losing beer.
Yeah, overall 4.5 average. That's not bad. So let's go ahead and reveal B first, see what that is. B, the loser, but not really a loser, of this episode with an overall 4.5 is...
Oh! The Kalamazoo Stout from Bell's.
Bell's Kalamazoo Stout. They're out of Comstock, Michigan, and it's a stout brewed with licorice. Go figure, I said licorice.
Good call
there,
on that, that flavor profile.
That is awesome. And it's 6% alcohol by volume. Did she get this from your store?
Probably.
Oh, you guys have Kalamazoo?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know you did.
Oh, no, when Bell's first rolled out, that was one of the ones they rolled out with.
I didn't see it. You guys had the display there, and
it's
all I
right
saw
there
was like...
Yeah, no, it's right there in the display.
I have selective seeing, I guess.
I want to say there's like 3 or 4 cases on that display right now.
Well, I had no idea. I had no freaking clue. Shows how oblivious I am.
Sometimes you got to get those blinders off of him. He gets a little focused.
Yeah, no, that's true, and you can ask Rebecca about that. I'm the type of person who I'm looking in the pantry and I'm like, I don't see it. Where is it? I'm looking for it. It's in front of my face. But you can't move things.
Correct.
Things have to be exactly where I expect them to be. Otherwise, I'm not going to find them. Just the way I am. All right. Well, let's check out B. B, a very nice beer. Very
delicious.
Nice beer.
Delicious.
Overall of 6. Winner of the episode is...
Ooh, I see a wax top, too.
Yeah, it is a wax top. Oh, snap! It is bourbon barrel aged.
Is it?
Yes. This was sent in by Fremont Brewing.
Nice. Thank you, Fremont Brewing.
Very awesome. They've had a few beers. They sent a bunch of beers. So this is another one.
Bravo, bravo. Oh,
very happy to see this. Bourbon Barrel Aged Abominable Winter Ale. This is their 2014 release.
Nah, it ages very,
almost
very well.
11% alcohol by volume. I did feel like I was getting some sort of spirit. That was the bourbon. 2014 limited release bourbon barrel aged abominable winter ale. It was a medal at the World Beer Cup. 2012 bronze award wooden barrel aged strong beer. Wow, so it's award winning beer. Hey, thanks for sending this. Damn. Okay.
Excellent job, gentlemen. Keep up the good work.
No doubt. I want to read about it because it's got information. This year's release of B Bomb. I guess they call it B Bomb. Is aged in 12 and 15-year-old American oak whiskey barrels and is a blend of 24 and 12-month-old barrel-strength abominable ale. B-Bomb achieves distinct bourbon, oak, which I said I was getting the oak, cocoa, leather, and dark coffee notes from its extended barrel aging and barrel blending. Each barrel contributes a different note, and combining each barrel to create a coherent tone is a distinct art and a true pleasure. Please do not enjoy this unique barrel-aged ale today, but know that B-Bomb will age gracefully for at least another 5 years. Don't be afraid to be abominable. And then they actually have what they call the Down and Dirty, which is the information on what they put in the beer. And it has pale, chocolate, roast, Carafa, Munich, and dark crystal malts. And then the hops involved with it are Columbus, Willamette, and Golding hops. So there you have it. Bourbon Barrel Aged Abominable from 2014. Really good. Although I'm confused as to why it's called a winter ale when it really tastes like a stout. really does. But anyway, sounds like I'm just talking to myself right now, because I am, because Mike just went off to the bathroom while I read all that, but he's back.
He does this to me all the time. I'm like, I'm going to make it through the episode. I'm going to make it through the episode. Then all of a sudden he's like, and I want to read about this beer. Oh, no, I'm not making it through this episode.
Yeah, sorry about that. Sometimes the text is a lot, but yeah. So it actually sounds like they went through a lot of work on this beer, because there was blending involved and aging in different barrels. And yeah, so that's a good beer.
Yeah.
That's a really good beer.
Can I see that bottle, oh by gosh. The way?
Oh, sure. Sure, sure. And yes, wax top to it to make sure that you don't get any oxidation.
And not like a super thick wax, like some of the other breweries that I've seen out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like not too long ago, Terrapin's French Toast Wake and Bake.
Super thick wax.
They double waxed it, which the top wax was scratch and sniff, so that was really, really cool. But that's got to be the first beer of the night, because you got to take a knife to it, and if you've had a couple beers before that, yeah, you might stick your hand with that knife while you're trying to get that wax off.
Yeah, that's true.
Keep the wax to a limit, please.
I actually think, I don't know if it was the Terrapin that it happened with, but I've definitely cut my finger trying to cut the wax off a beer like that. So, yeah. But anyway, oh, Fremont Brewing, come on. We've thanked you before for the other beers you've sent, but I want to give you a even larger thank you right now, because this Abominable is tasting very, very good.
Exceptional. And I would just like to add to that thank you of, please, can you start shipping beer to Maryland so I can sell it?
Yeah, I don't know what their distribution's like, so they might be a ways away from that.
Couple great distributors in Maryland to deal with, Bond and Legends Limited. Awesome beer houses that would respect your beer to the T.
Okay, well, you heard it from Mike. Fremont, go ahead and start distributing in Maryland, especially this Abominable and Bourbon Barrel Aged version, and the special Savor version that we had that was the cinnamon coffee bourbon version.
Oh, for like Savor Festival in DC?
Yeah.
Oh, I was so jealous you got to go to that.
I was jealous of myself. It was awesome. But, oh, and anybody who wanted to hear how that went, if you haven't, we do have episodes strictly about Savor. There was one that just dealt with Savor in general and one that dealt with the salons that we went to. All a lot of fun. So go ahead and check those out. Feel free to send us some emails, brutalbattlepodcast@gmail.com. Ask us anything or request whatever. We don't care. Always looking for new ideas for special episodes too. We're going to have some fun ones coming up. We want to do some food related pairings with beer, like ice cream, maybe do cookies at some point, chips, whatever.
A lot you could get into with food and beer pairings.
For sure.
Like, I always argue this with the wine guys at work. There's so much more you can do with beer than wine any day of the week.
Well, because you can use a lot more ingredients.
And with that, with the food pairing, just the drinking in common, beer is the mad science of the alcohol industry.
That's true. And Dogfish Head proved that early, very early.
Yes. Haven't always agreed with some of the stuff they've produced, but they're always producing crazy, outlandish things that is very respectable.
Pioneers, if you will. Anyway, thank you everyone for listening. Thank you, Mike, for helping me drink this Abominable.
Oh, anytime, anytime.
And thank you everyone for listening once again. And please remember to keep it brutal.
This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.